tonight. Thank you. I am here tonight to talk about One Bright Pearl. So, you know, I was participating in the Shuso Hosen in March, and we talked about the first part of this festival, basically the very first koan, wherein Gensha stubs his toe. But the festival has two koans in it, and this time I want to work on the second one. And it's really you guys, when I get to that point, it's you guys doing the talking. I got plenty of time. We're going to clip through how the festival came to be, a little bit of history on Gensha. And then we'll review the first koan, and then we'll go right into the second. And we've got lots of time to do that. So I'm going to talk kind of fast in my intro. This is the first of about four. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm going to cut my ear throughout because I don't have my ear.
Why you get that microphone?
No, no, that.
Why do you get to the microphone?
Oh. Okay. I'm going to use the mic.
Thank you. I'm just going to be doing this.
That's okay. I'm going to use the mic.
Okay. It's.
As a lot of you know, okay. Hello. Is that good?
Yeah.
Should I come closer?
No? No, it's really good. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Dogen went to China from 1223 to 1227. He's our revered ancestor in Japan, and he went to study in China for a few years. As soon as he came back from China, he wrote Fuken Zazengi, which I thought we were reciting tonight, but it was a different one. But we read that often here. And the second thing he wrote was Bendawa. I happen to really like Bendawa. Some of us have studied it. But it was his second essay or fascicle. Then he founded his first temple, Koshoji. And the summer he founded the temple, he wrote two other essays, Genjo Koan, which we are familiar with because we read that on Tuesday night, and his commentary on the Heart Sutra called Makahanya Haramisa. But after he wrote those in the summer, he took a break to spend time getting his temple established, took a few years. And after that break, the first thing he wrote was Ika Myoju. He has always loved the expression, the teaching expression, the universe in all 10 directions is one bright pearl. And so he wanted to write an essay on it. Very quickly about my sources, I did consult a website called judithrager.org. If anybody wants to know about that, I can put it, somebody's nodding their head. I read that a lot in preparation for my Shuso Hosen. I didn't consult it so much in preparation for this talk, but it's good. And she is a bona fide teacher. It looks like there's a big 12-step connection between her blog posts and Zen. And she studied this at the San Francisco Zen Center, among other places. Then I did something kind of foolish. I purchased online 9 lectures by Shohaku Okamura, whom many of us know and love. Many of the things we read in our chant book are his translations. And there were 9 lectures on Ika no Myojin. As some of you know, we've been trying to sell our house. We've been trying to make a decision about our lives. We've been trying to find an apartment. We found it. We just moved. Now I'm wading my way through boxes. And I haven't been able to go anywhere or do anything. I haven't really been able to leave the house because a couple of times I've gotten in the car and gone somewhere and I get a call from the realtor, can you come show your house at blah, blah, blah. So it's been a trying April, May, June, July. And I was feeling sorry for myself. I haven't had a vacation. All I want to do is go to the beach. So I spent $80 on 9 lectures on one room. But it's not 9 lectures. It's about 100 little audio files.
Oh, God.
And this one's 5 minutes, and this one's 10 minutes, and this one's 30 minutes, and on and on and on. I think I listened to about 40. And that might constitute 4 to 6 hours of listening time, maybe a little more. I did over time. And it was very difficult. I do not recommend this. It was very difficult. It was done years ago. The quality is not good. I did not realize, even though I know Shohaku Okumura is Japanese, I knew he had an accent at the time. This was done. It was a heavy accent. So you really spend a lot of time trying to figure out what he says. There's a lot of hesitation. It's dumped. Having said that, I learned a lot about history, and it really sparked in me desire to learn more about Chinese history, particularly the Tang Dynasty and the Song Dynasty. So I'm going to be looking into that. I also, the whole thing started with Don't Be a Jerk. Can you guys see that? This is by Brad Warner. I really love Brad Warner. He is a punk rock musician. Sorry. As well as a bona fide Zen teacher. His teacher is Gudo Nishijima. And Brad knows his stuff. He's just very modern day about it. Little teeny bit irreverent. But I like him and he's fun to read. And so if you're reading some fascicle, that's a bit of a struggle. See if he's got his own version of it because it's just fun. And then there are a reading I picked up here and there, one by Dino Lurie, and I will quote from that, some by Tegan Dan Layton, and so forth. But really, by the time I had done the Shuso Hosen and I read the fascicle a couple more times, a lot of it has to do with my own interpretation, and we'll get to why that is. I picked this for my Shuso Hosen ceremony because I really did identify with Gensha. Shibi is his Dharma name. So by calling him Gensha Shibi, we're saying Jinryu Gen, all good. I wanted to call him Shibi for some reason. Joni and I had a discussion, and I came away from it thinking I should call him Gensha. I don't know why, but I just got into that habit. The other thing, and I began to think about it more and study about it more, I began to identify with him in his older years, which is the time of the second koan. And I felt in this essay, more than others I have read, some kindness in Dogen, because there are times when you read him and he'll say something like, and then, you know, you might have some dumb monk who doesn't know anything and he'll ask a question about so-and-so. There's none of that in this fascicle, and you can see the kindness between Gensha's teacher and Gensha, and Gensha and the monk. And I really appreciated that. A couple of quick words on the title. The Shasta Abbey version calls it the One Bright Pearl. Shohaku Okumura will tell you there are 7 different translations of this essay. Usually you find them written as Ikan Myoju. Every now and then I would see one called Ikan no Myoju. And I couldn't figure out why. I studied Japanese when I first got to Bright Way Zen for 2 semesters at Portland Community College at night. Nothing. But I did know that no meant possession. Possessive is a possessive form of a word. So no myoju means of the world. What I also learned was that ika is a contraction. It's a combination of the word for number one and the word ka for peace, as in P-I-E-C-E. So if you are looking at the title Ika no Myoju, what you're reading is one piece of the bright world. Everybody calls it one bright pearl. Shohaku Okamura insists that it is not a pearl, it is a jewel, because you can't cut a piece of a pearl. But a skilled stone worker can take a 3-carat diamond and make it into 3 1-carat diamonds. I mean, they can, you know, shave off some baguettes here, you know, a prince's cut here. And so he insists that it's one bright jewel. But the important thing about that is that the jewel manifests itself in Hinduism and Buddhism a lot. And like I could list about 10 ways if I thought about it, but I'm only going to give you 2. The first one is the sum of the manifestations of Kanzeon. See her in a sort of relaxed royal position holding the wish-giving gem. That's considered the Mani jewel. And the other example is Indra's net. So for those who don't know, this is Hindu and Buddhist mythology. Indra is the king of the devas. Devas are beings in the sky. So you have this gigantic castle of King Indra in the sky. And hanging over that castle is a gigantic fishing net. And at every knot, there is a jewel. And the idea is that each jewel reflects the beauty and the colors and the brilliance of all the other jewels. So that's another example of the use of jewel in Buddhism. And I'm going to call it one bright pearl. I've been calling it one bright pearl for months, but it probably really is one bright jewel. I mean, in Shakuhaku, I mean, he's a trend. He knows. So who was Genshā? He was a real person. And what we're reading in this essay is probably a story that Dogen kind of made up about him. One thing that is common with all the stories about Genshā is that he loved to fish. So Dogen describes that as well. He loved to go out fishing in the river all the time. And he did that, excuse me, up until his late 20s, up until he was about 30. The other thing about him that Dogen doesn't address is that he was probably from a wealthy family. And the family name was Shah. And as you may know, Dogen was from a wealthy family as well, even though his mother died when he was young. Dogen doesn't mention that aspect of Genshā in this story for whatever reason. His epitaph indicates, Genshā's epitaph indicates that he was from a wealthy family. In addition to being a student of Master Seppo, his ancestors include a lineage are in a lineage that includes Shirto, who brought us the song. What is it? The song of the Master of Home. What is it? Inside the Grass Hut. We're studying that in. Isn't it the song of the grass-roofed hermitage? Okay, well, my notes say Inside the Grass Hut, whatever. It's a lovely, lovely teaching poem, and we're studying it in the book group right now. He is also the author of Sandokai, a teaching poem, which we read on morning service A. I'm looking at the crowd to see if anybody is agreeing. Harmony of difference and sameness. Also, from this lineage, we get the transmission of light, which is a collection of stories and koans from all the famous Zen masters, starting with Shakyamuni, I think. And we also get the Blue Cliff record. This lineage brought about five Chan schools in China. Gensha and Seppo lived during the ninth century, the middle to end of the ninth century. Did you need Erica?
I'm wondering if you can pull the camera down so we can,
Yes,
so
absolutely.
everyone can see a little
For
bit more
sure.
of her.
Absolutely.
You know, all we're getting is the
Yeah.
neck, the chin up.
Ew.
And no, I
Yeah. Oh,
mean,
you
like,
mean
if you can
here.
angle the camera
Yeah.
so that you can see her hands when she does it.
Oh, sorry. That's good. How's that?
Yeah, more, yeah.
That good?
Better.
Do you want it more?
No, then we'll cut off the top of my
No,
head.
then our head will be cut off. So right there.
That's
All right.
yeah.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank
Yeah.
you for saying that.
Yeah.
So it's a famous lineage, and it gave birth to five different schools of Chan in China. Seppo and Gensha lived toward the middle and end of the ninth century. They died at the very beginning of the 10th century, right around the time that the Tang Dynasty ended. There ended up being a period of 50 or 60 years of chaos in China at that time, and then the Song Dynasty was established. So the Tang Dynasty is the golden age of Buddhism. The Song Dynasty is really a Chinese cultural golden age. So very interesting time in between in which they lived and died. When this chaotic period between the two dynasties occurred, coming out of that period, only two schools were left, Soto and Rinzai. So it's an interesting and important lineage. Gensha was, he didn't get to the monastery until he was about 30, and that's when he began to study. So he probably hadn't read much in the way of sutras or studied much, but he really began to study a lot then, and his reputation was of being very austere, very much of a hard student. He was called Mr. Hard Practice, Mr. Austerity. I mean, you see different nicknames for him in various translations. So that brings us to the first koan, and I'll just cover this by a quick review. Gensha goes to Mount Seppo. He just decides, after all his time fishing, that maybe it's time to think about the great matter of life and death. And he climbs Mount Seppo to study under the Chan master there, Seppo, and earns this nickname of being a very focused and diligent student. But then one day he decides, I think I need to get out more and see other teachers and learn about Buddhism from other people. And in that day and age, that was common. So he did that. He packed up his things, he headed out the door, and as he's going down the road of Mount Seppo, he stubs his toe. And it hurts like mad, and it bleeds like crazy. And he has a brilliant insight. And the insight is, this body is not supposed to exist. It's not permanent, it's not fixed. So why does my foot hurt so bad? It's hurt me like crazy. In that moment, he saw two different aspects of reality come together at the same time. And he realized, this is my adding to it, he realized that he didn't need to tell a story about that. He didn't need to make up some dramatic story about how bad it was and how long it took him to limp back to the temple, and he bled the whole way and blah, blah. He just saw it. So when he got back to the temple, and his teacher, Seppo, said, "Mr. Austerity, what's up?" And Genchan says, "The trouble is, I can't be fooled anymore." Now, that's what he says in the Brad Warner version, and that's the version I like. I can't remember exactly what he says in the Shasta Abbey version. There are lots of different takes on what he said, but the one that I resonate with is, I can't be fooled anymore because there's no point in telling a story. It is what it is. So I don't have to make up stories about how bad it was, how much I love, blah, blah, blah. Another thing his teacher asks him is, well, why didn't you continue on your search for other teachers? Which, you know, it depends on how it's pointed out in the essay, but, you know, my response would have been because I hurt my toe really bad and I need to come back and have somebody look at it. But what Genshaw says is the kind of enigmatic response of Bodhidharma did not come from the West. And the second ancestor did not go to India.
That was his response to the stub toe.
Yeah, that was his response to the question, why didn't you go on your pilgrimage? I take that to mean that Bodhidharma did not have a goal of going to China and teaching those Chinese people a thing or two about Buddhism. What he did was he followed his heart. In the same way the second ancestor followed his heart and remained in China. In that way, Genshaw followed his heart and went home to his teacher, Seppo, and he stayed with Seppo for the rest of his years. He did not ever go out on a pilgrimage to other teachers and temples again, according to this story. So that's the first koan, and that brings us up, that catches everybody up to where we are with the second koan. And I will read the second koan. In fact, I'm going to put it up on the screen and share my screen. Oh, I'm not touching the mouse. It's all I want. Why is it not staying up? Okay. Now I'm going to share the screen. Where did that go? Share screen. It's on the bottom.
Yeah. It's a green arrow.
I know that.
Oh, I don't think so. Sorry, I didn't mean to correct you.
That's okay. Where's the arrow?
Would you like me to help you?
Yes, because we had this problem before, remember?
Yeah.
We couldn't see the stuff.
Right. So let's go back to the.
Excuse me. Yeah, okay.
Is that good?
Yeah. What were you going to say, Bob?
I just wanted to make sure you had permissions to share a screen.
Do I need permission? Oh,
good.
I have
that.
Yeah.
Just computer.
She's co-host, so she's good.
Thank you. So this is the second koan from Ika Myoju or Ika no Myoju, whichever way you want to look at it. Why scroll?
View. Normal. And then we just go with two things. How about that?
Okay.
But you go slow.
Okay.
You got to make sure your mouse.
I don't want them to see that.
Okay. Why is it scrolling down? It froze up.
So,
interesting. Did your computer just shut it all down? So hang on, let me reshare it. Oh, shut down that window. Where's the file at?
It should be an open Word document.
Okay. The computer, the Word document crashed. So do you know where it's saved? Second colon right here.
You know, I don't want to waste any more time on this.
Okay. Then I will let it go. You may want to just read it to us, maybe?
Yeah, I'm going to read it.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, the program crashed.
I am very sorry about that. And, you know, this is why I wanted to get set up. I mean, I will never share my screen again on this computer. But anyway, I will read it to you. I am hoping some of you had a chance to read the essay that was attached to the newsletter. It's a short essay, which is nice. And this is the second koan. In time, Genshaw realized the way, and afterwards, in pointing it out to people, he would say, "The whole universe, throughout all its 10 directions, is the one bright pearl." One time, a monk inquired of him, "Reverend monk, I have heard you say that the whole universe, throughout all its 10 directions, is one bright pearl. How am I, as a trainee, to understand the meaning of this?" Gensha Shibi answers, "Since the whole universe, throughout all its 10 directions, is the one bright pearl, what use is there in trying to understand this with the intellect? However, the next day, Master Genshaw asked the monk again, "The whole universe throughout all its 10 directions is the one bright pearl. So what do you think it means?" The monk responded, "Since the whole universe throughout all its 10 directions is the one bright pearl, what use is there in my trying to understand this with the intellect?" Shibi replied, "It is indeed clear to me that even though you are blindly looking into the demon's cave within the pitch black mountains of ignorance, you are doing your training." So that's the code. And I'm hoping some of you may have close to you either the fascicle itself or able to have that in front of you particularly.
I can share it for you, Jinryu, if you like.
Please do.
Mark for the rescue.
He's going to share the koan. I was going to have to reread it.
Not very smart.
You should put yourself on.
There we go. How's that look?
It looks great. Can you scroll it to where we... It's pretty much it. So we know right before it says one time a monk inquired that he was, Geshe was famous for saying this expression, in a universe in its 10 directions, is one bright pearl. So what I would like to do, and now you have the koan right in front of you, I would like to give you guys 5 minutes and grab a pencil and a piece of paper, and I have them, I'll pass them around in the Zendo. And perhaps, we're not gonna go into breakout rooms, So we'll just mute each other and you guys can see these questions in the chat because someone is going to put them there. Can you do that, Mark?
I am sharing a PDF on my computer. I don't have your questions.
I'm going to give them to you.
Ah, okay.
They were on the document that crashed. So the first question is this. So you are not to answer all four. I'm only going to give you 5 to 7 minutes. But pick one. Pick one that you think makes sense to you and write down what you're thinking about it. The first question is, what do you think about Genshin's response to the monk when he asks, how are we supposed to think about this? And Genshin replies, since the whole universe throughout all its 10 directions is the one bright pearl, what use is there in trying to understand this with the intellect? What do you think about that response? That's question number one.
Sorry, question number one is, what do you think of Genshin's first response?
Yeah. Question number two. You know, I should be, could you guys be passing these out? Because you may want to write down the question that you want to answer. Those are pads, here are pads. Yep. Question number two is, did the monk understand or did he not understand?
Oh.
Oh, that's cute. And you can get a template to write on or whatever. So question number two is, did the monk understand or not? Question number three is, what is the pitch back clay? Pitch black. What is it called? The pitch black cave of the demon in the mountains of ignorance. I'll say that again. What is that? What is the demon's cave within the pitch black mountains of ignorance? What is that? And then the final question is, does this koan have any meaning for you? Okay, so do you guys need to have the thing? Can I share the chat even though I'm sharing? No, I have to stop sharing. Mark has to stop sharing.
You can do a show meeting, but I can certainly stop sharing, yes.
Do you guys want to continue to see the koan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So are you guys comfortable with the questions? I can repeat them.
I wrote them down.
You guys are okay?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm not going to give you a long talk because I want us to have quite a bit of time for discussion. So I have 8:39 on the Pacific Northwest. So we'll stop at 8:45. So that's like 6 minutes. And should I do this?
So this is a whole koan right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Most of it's on the second page, page 38.
I just want to remind folks in the cloud that you really only have to answer one. If you want to do more than one, that's great. But just pick the one that works for you. One more. I'm going to go ahead and call time. Are you guys here okay if we stop sharing, if Mark stops sharing?
Yes.
So Mark, you can just let us go back to our regular view. Okay. So let me, you know, anybody who wants to speak can. Did anybody tackle the first question? What do you think about the way Genshai responded? Would you like to share that?
Me?
Yes.
Okay.
And raise your hand in the cloud if you would like to share too.
Okay. So this was the response about what point is there and what use is there in trying to understand this with the intellect. Correct. Okay. So what I wrote here is, basically, I agree with that response. The intellect's a very limited aspect of the one and is unable to fully grasp reality, reality with a capital R, or truth. The intellect is not self. When we talk about, is it the skandhas? Is that the term? So intellect is not self, and we're much more than intellect. Intellect cannot grasp the entirety of the universe, and we need to go beyond intellect to tap into a much more expansive quality, like the field of oneness, in order to grasp the essence of the one bright pearl. So.
I think that's wonderful. Does anybody want to add to that or comment on it or disagree with it?
Can you repeat what she said since she's facing?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you want me
We
to
should have.
use the mic, or I can just turn around and say it? Okay.
Jinryu, can
I don't know
you
if
repeat it?
you.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is that the intellect is a source of where all of our stories are. So, what use is it in trying to sell stories about this? The intellect gets in our way. And the minute I talk about the one great bright pearl, I am now talking in dualistic terms. There's the pearl, here am I. And so Brad Warner in particular said, I love this. Emotions and intellect separate us from the real universe. So that does that work?
Yeah, did you want me to repeat anything that I had said here? Was there?
No, that's fine. I just wanted
Okay.
the summary. But
Yeah.
good.
So it's basically saying,
Yeah.
yeah, intellect is not self. It's in order to grasp, we have to go be much more expansive beyond the intellect, to encompass the entirety of it.
Thank you, Natalie.
Yes.
I would respond to your invitation, Jinru, to add to that. Is it best if I sit here and speak this way? Can everybody hear me? And that way you can hear too,
Can the
Judith?
cloud hear,
No,
Jeff?
I'm
Bob said thumbs up.
Yeah.
Okay, and you can hear if I speak like this, Judith?
Yeah.
Okay,
As long
cool.
as I turn towards you.
Okay, cool. I thought Natalie's comments were right on. Very similarly, I think of our interest in our intellect, the power that we give it, to represent one of our potential delusions, that it is more than it is, as Natalie's saying. And I think if we get caught up in it can disappoint us in that we feel like we can't understand something, and we then may miss the opportunity to just accept that something is the way it is true, and let that be so in a non-intellectual way. Maybe it's something like faith, maybe it's in the body, and thereby benefit from it potentially immediately, as opposed to eventually when we quote figure out this thing.
I'll hold back on a quote from Dido Laurie that I think is just absolutely wonderful. I may end with that, but everybody is really saying the things that I resonate with, surely. There's not a right answer here, but I think we're all kind of on the same boat with that. Does anybody in the cloud want to add before I go to the second question? The second question
Oh,
was,
Susan had her hand up.
oh, Susan, I didn't see your hand.
My hand came late. I was just, to me, the intellectual part really has to do with analysis. And rather than using your whole body, mind, and heart. But I mean, this is the great challenge for all Zen students because you have to say something. There are times when you have to say something. How do you say something without, but keep it, below the neck? Can we speak and voice and use our brains and minds and heart, but resist analyzing? I just want to say a word about a related point, which I could do later, but it's pretty quick. And that has to do with the jewel that you referred to. Looking at the pearl as a jewel. Is that okay? Kazan, whom I love, included in the transmission of the lamp, ancestor number 15, he called Longsha. Actually, Nagarjuna, said was asked a question about the jewel, the Mani jewel, and there was a little dialogue. And he said, actually, the thing about the Mani jewel that fulfills our wishes and is the fountain of Kanzeon, as you said, the thing about the jewel is it's not even a jewel. When, and in his great poem related to this koan, he says, he references the wish-fulfilling Mani spreading the radiance around, this light, this uncanny, mysterious, but very ordinary light spreading the radiance around. And it's the radiance of a pearl. I mean, it just really seems so much like that. Thanks, Jinryu.
Thank you. So, the next question, did anybody try and tackle the second question? Did the monk get it or did the monk not get it?
I think, well, I wrote something. Who knows? You're pointing to the chair, right?
Would you mind?
I don't. I just came from an exercise class and I can't stand
Sorry to make it.
Okay. Greetings. This is what I wrote. It doesn't mean that it means anything. The monk understands that he must experience the one bright pearl. It is not possible to discuss it and understand it intellectually. It must be experienced.
You guys are really brilliant. This is a wonderful answer. So in your view, the monk does get it.
Yeah, he does.
Almost every commentary on this that you will read, the monk doesn't get it.
No, I think
Does
he
not.
does. He.
But some people think he does. I think he does. And I resonated with that because I can hear Domio and I talking like that.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to think of that? Well, I don't know, Jinryu. What are you supposed to think of that? I mean, I really appreciate
Like that of you.
but a lot of teachers will say the monk doesn't get it. Go ahead.
Well, I feel like what Judith said is that the monk understands, he does get that he doesn't have, like,
You got it.
I was just thinking that there are two parts to it because what Judith said it was he understands that he has to experience it, but it doesn't mean that he has experienced it yet. Or that he's fully experienced it, or that he's done experiencing it, you know. And I just feel like I'm already going to four, but I feel like I can resonate with that because I feel like sometimes when I read these things, I just am waiting for it to like I know it's slowly gonna sink in and or suddenly click sometime, you know, when I'm doing something else.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Did she say that the monk? So I think we're corroborating each other,
Yes.
right?
Yes.
Yeah, he hasn't experienced it yet, but
Yes.
he knows that's the only way he can
Sooner or
even,
later, yes.
yeah.
If you just let it lie, and I feel this way, I feel exactly the way Jen was describing it. And I have done this throughout my time here at Brightway Zen, and I think a lot of you guys are ahead of me, but if I don't get it, I just let it simmer. I'll get it sooner or later. Anybody else want to comment on question two? We have 4 minutes left to do two questions.
I don't mind commenting on question two because it flows into my question three and four together.
Do it.
Is that okay?
Do it.
Okay.
So question three was,
what is the mountains of
ignorance? What is the blockade? And question four is, what does it mean to you? So just take it all.
Okay. Now you've embarrassed me, Jennifer.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Can you hear me, Judith?
When you look at me.
Okay. How about this? Is this
That's
better?
Great.
Okay. So this is actually interesting. I was talking with a friend, Ethan. He comes on Sunday sometimes last night.
Yes.
And we were talking about stream entry and the awareness of the breath as the recognizing that I am all things. So I am also the pearl. So I do think that the monk gets it on a level, but he also doesn't get it on all levels, because the awareness of the breath as the I am and understanding that we are part of the 10 directions, we are part of the pearl, is still an identity that still must be gotten rid of for us to enter the stream. So to me, the pitch black mountains of ignorance are not knowing, not seeing. And I kind of took it as allegory of the self, like in Plato's cave, so that it is literally the looking at the wall, not understanding what reality is actually going on. And to me, that ties directly into the meaning of the koan, in that the Dharma is always true. Whether we grasp it in full or not, the will to practice, the will to learn, are the Dharma in truth as well, because the Dharma is everything and we are already enlightened even when we do not know it. So therefore, staring at the black mountains of ignorance is still the Dharma at the moment for you, and in consistency, the truth will illuminate you, because the practice, and this is one of my favorite things Domingo said in one of her podcasts, the practice is the enlightenment. And so that's kind of how I gathered everything from there.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And, you know, what's interesting about that is that there are some people, teachers, who interpret the black cave and the demon and the black, pitch black mountains and all that as ignorance, as you have just said. Others kind of looked at it as daily life. This is what we do all the time. Does anybody else? I have 9 o'clock on the dot. I'm sorry. One person, does anybody want to say what this means to them? What do you want to say?
Well, so I wanted to comment on what is the demon's cave. And the way that I see the demon's cave, when I think about a demon, is it's an entity that haunts us, that makes us doubt ourselves, that is scary. So the demon's cave is the place that we go when we feel that angst to know. And which means we are attaching ourselves to that angst and to that inability to not understand.
One of the things that I learned thinking about this koan and in my readings and so forth is that I think one of the things Dogen wants us to do is not attach to anything.
Not attached to what?
Anything. And the Genjo koan is very clear. A fish is life. A bird is life. Life is a fish. A fish is a bird. A bird is life. You know, it's, don't get attached to anything. Don't get attached to meanings, because that's our intellect trying to tell us stories. Just experience it. And a thing about that Dunyo said about koans, which got me more interested in it because I have to date not liked them very much, is it's not a riddle to solve. You don't learn what the koan is all about, you experience it. So that's why I think the question of How does this feel to me? It's a good question to answer. I'm going to close with one little thing from Dado Lurie that I really loved. And it's very, it's short. I can get my pages.
Jinryu, what can I just ask? So now that you've given us these koans, they're forever embedded in this, right? And so we're forced to carry them around. That's the point of the koan, right? Isn't it? Wouldn't it be?
I suppose.
I mean, it'll just go through your head all the time. Okay. That's all I have to say. It's all your fault.
I'm sorry. I am going to read this. Okay. This is what Dado Lurie said. You can't learn it. You have to experience it yourself. Now, that's what I said. This is what Dado Lurie said. I'm on this subject. Some of us will go to our graves never having realized it. But the fact is, we are always making the journey with that one bright pearl. Our practice is to discover that. It can't be given. It can't be received. But it can be discovered. And the way you discover it is to strip off all the extra, all the excess baggage. When everything is gone, when there is nothing else to let go of, and I would add, when there's nothing left to cling to, there it is, the one bright pearl. Your life, my life, and the life of the entire universe. And I would add to that comment about your life and my life. It is as precious, your precious life, my precious life, as precious as a jewel. Any final comments? I know we're over and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Good. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All other ones.
Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom. Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you, everybody. Mark, thanks for helping out.
Glad to do it. It's a great talk.
Thank you.